Blog Talk Radio.
Edition of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you for joining us for what should be another great show. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click tag and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And tonight, we're launching out into the deep. We're going out even without a safety vest. We're talking about a YouTube video, y'all, that has made its rounds on social media this week. The video was allegedly from October 20th, 2022. It was taken in the ballot room of the Tarrant County Elections Headquarters. It features two ladies by the name of Kate Cano and Jocelyn Pankey. Both, according to the YouTube narrator, are allegedly engaged in activity that could have compromised the integrity of the November 2022 Tarrant County election. That said, as of this week, it was verified that Kat Cano, was still a ballot board member. So does that mean that the May 6th 2023 election may have also been compromised as well? In the words of Pastor John Hanna, y'all, out of Chicago, we out here now. Tonight, we're talking about what others are whispering about. With that said, let's talk forward. I see Christopher is on the line tonight, and I also see Adrian. Good evening, guys. How are y'all doing?
Hello, Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hello.
Hey, Carrie.
Mayday, mayday, because we have the deep. Oh, mayday, mayday. Listen, y'all, that, you know, it's so funny because, you know, there was a lot of speculation about the May 6th election, and I kind of put a prayer. I don't know if I was kidding. I think I was serious, but I really didn't expect much trauma or nothing. Listen, let's just pray that God exposes, reveals, and uncovers anything that was done in the dark. That was just kind of like, you know, the prayer. And certain people, you know, said, okay, and they agree. And I guess they call it a corporate prayer of agreement. Well, listen, y'all, that was a quick turnaround on that prayer, because if this video be true, and, you know, we have not done any investigative work, to be honest with you, to be clear, we did reach out to Kat Kano and Jocelyn Pankey, let me get her name right, to ask them to be on the show tonight, because we do believe in balance, y'all, and everything tonight is alleged. You know, we saw the video, but we were not able to verify anything as of showtime tonight, other than Kat Kano was still when I made that phone call with the ballot board. She was still a ballot board member. So with that, everything tonight is alleged. We ain't trying to get sued. We just going to talk about what we saw. So y'all, what are y'all's thoughts on the video?
How did it come about? You know, the initial sharing of it.
Well, you know what? Let me be clear. Let me do something, because I do want to give credit where it is due. I do not steal anybody else's stuff, y'all. Progressives for Liberty. Is the one that produced the video, and it is on YouTube. So we don't want to take the credit from anybody. Progressives for Liberty has that up on YouTube, and that's where we got it from. So it appears, to answer your question, Adrian, obviously some folks were talking about the last election, the last Tarrant County election, and obviously they decided to get the ballot board room videos. But it almost makes me wonder if there was some talk somewhere that made them decide that you know, it was worth getting. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's important. You know, whatever brought us to this point, you know, I think it's important because, you know, we people took issues with our former president, you know, saying what he said about voting, voting irregularity. Hold on 1 second.
What?
About voting irregularities and things of that nature, and you know, people were saying, "Well, he just salty because he lost." But when you see things like this, one has to ask themselves, outside of that, the local stuff. You know, we know locally, people tend to probably turn their heads away from certain things. So it makes me, I'm concerned, you know. I'm truly concerned because I'm a voter. I believe in voter integrity. I believe that based on how it was narrated, if from the narration, if it's saying you're not supposed to do this and you did this and they were doing this and they're not supposed to, that's where in line I'm like, okay, so if they're going against things they were told not to do, then, yeah, maybe we have it's something to be very much considered.
Okay. And then you're not just a voter, you're a candidate, right?
Thank you, Carrie.
I said you're not just a voter, you're a candidate.
I'm a candidate as well. Yeah. Thank you, Carrie. Hey, Carrie. I will take it all the time. Thank you, Carrie. Hey, thank you, Carrie.
Right. You say what, Christopher?
I would channel this back into something. One of the first conversations we had on the show when I first got introduced with Adrian and the Let's Talk Fort Worth team, you know, I forgot what the topic was, but me and Adrian really fleshed out something coming from a military profession, you know, kind of a military perspective of procedures and just propriety and integrity and there's, it's like you said, you have regulations, you have rules, you have laws, we have all of these things, all of these things that are in play, and these people are paid well, okay? They're paid well, and here's the thing that I say is, like, in a ballot room, you know, you just, without the specifics of what was narrated in the video or this, that, whatever, just to take a big picture analysis, there was so many things going on in there from my perspective. From my perspective, you know, there was a sheriff's deputy that had a duty that he was supposed to be sort of, I mean, I'm sure he had, you know, what is the general orders you have in the military? I will guard everything in the limits of my post and quit, you know, I'll perform all my duties in a military manner, you know, and I will report all violations, you know, emergencies and anything not covered in my special instructions to the commander of the relief and all. You know, these are things that are day one and when you go to basic training. And this is what I say, like, I would view the arms room in, you know, if you, Adrian, when you're dealing with arms room issues and sensitive item inventories, I would compare the arms room operations and the sensitive items inventories that we did in the military and the security measures and the protocols that go into that. You have absolute walls. You have, like, this person is not allowed to cross the threshold. There's a door, there's cages, there's all kinds of things in place to where that stuff doesn't go off the rails in that process. And you have to have documentation. You have to sign. You have to read serial numbers. It's and it seems like a lot, but when you you really become a creature. It becomes instinctive whenever you are a professional about it. And I'm saying that's what we're paid in the military to do. So, the things that I saw was this deputy, the entire time during the video, it looks like he was scrolling on his phone. And I'm just like, even if you aren't in the military, anywhere you work, if you're working at, if you're sitting there flipping burgers at McDonald's, it's absolutely forbidden. And your boss would come and tap you on the shoulder and have you, you'd be fired for being that, you know, that lackadaisical and neglecting your duty in that manner.
And dereliction of duty?
Dereliction of duty, yeah.
Yo, you know,
and on top of that, just to finish polish off what I was going to say, the thing that we got going on with what's narrated and everything, there's other things that are in the background of this that, you know, there's some spin coming out in comments online and this people trying to maneuver themselves out of a, oh, legal this, oh, legal that. Well, I've also heard wind of that one of these individuals or both of these individuals have had direct relationship with candidates who have been on these ballots, have been to their homes, have been giving them political advice. I don't really know how to connect the dots there, but it just seems to me that a person who is on a ballot board that is having political at the same time that they're supposed to during an election or however it works out to be, that's improper. I mean, that's probably illegal.
I agree. And, y'all, I think they're saying that they broke the code 87006 of the election code, which basically is the early voting ballot board oath and identification. So the activities that day allegedly appear to, you know, violate that election code number 87.006. Now, listen, tonight, if you're a candidate, if you are a ballot board member, if you are a voter or even election judge, if you saw something, you know, in one of these elections, or if you you know something, you heard something, we'd love to hear from you tonight. Or if you are Ms. Cano or Ms. Pinky, we're not picking on you tonight. I love to hear from you. I love to show balance in reporting on these shows because, you know, again, tonight everything is alleged. But, you know, most people have seen the video by now. I remember when I first saw the video, it had 93 views, I believe. And when I looked at it today, it was either 373 or 474, which means like several hundred people have looked at it since I first saw it. So it's making its rounds. And so if y'all want to, you know, call in tonight, I'd definitely love to hear from you. So, you know, that's it. This is where I am on the video. And the video is about 14 minutes long for anybody who has not viewed it yet. I have never run for office, but I am somebody that when I do something, I put my whole heart into it. So if I were a candidate for or candidate that ran in either November of 2022 or in May 6th of 2023, I'd be asking for a recount. I really would. I would be asking, you know, first of all, I'd have a whole lot of questions. And then I think my end game would be I would want a recount. Do y'all think a recount is in order, or is that too much to ask?
My take on this thing is, I'm not trying to get ahead of myself on the outline here, because mm-hmm. you know, my whole take is that a recount is an easy go-to for sure thing, and it will demonstrate. I mean, that's the strong a manual recount with what? How do you got 50,000? You got for these particular races, you got like 50 or 60,000 votes maximum to count. Mm-hmm. I'm just mm-hmm. saying if you. Or I don't know, that election, that countywide election that we're talking about October 22nd was a little bit more. But, I mean, if you got less than 100,000 votes in a county with an election staff that big, then, hey, you just got to burn the midnight. You got to be able to sit there and say, hey, look, it doesn't look right on this video. And because we are public servants and we need to be accountable and we need to ensure – the appearance and the actual integrity of these elections, then let's just go ahead and pull these ballots in and do a manual verification and a manual count. And because the thing that I say is, I don't know, I look at the video and I see all of this technology, and I know that they have to recycle the technology, and they have to pay technicians, and they have to pay Hyder a lot of money. I'm not knocking on him, not personally attacking him, but for 100,000 votes, for us to be spending these millions and millions and millions of dollars to maintain these equipment and to staff this kind of thing and to pay these mm-hmm. people to do dereliction of duty, what it appears. I mean, but. Why? What was wrong with the way we did things 20 or 30 years ago? I mean, have we now, if we were a city of like New York City or 5,000, you know, 500, if there were 300,000 votes or more, then it would be time to go ahead and invest. But it's not really that. I just don't see with Fort Worth that the way we did things 20 or 30 years ago has come to a point where we need to have. And, you know, here's the thing that we have also in play is, you know, and I guess we can get to that later about the outages, you know.
We will. We're going to get to it. But the recount is the issue right now because, you know, the thing is, y'all, I'm a licensed insurance agent, y'all, by the way. And I've forgotten the term, and I passed it on the test, but I forgot this part of it. But it's a term. And basically the term is to say that, let's just say you own Kroger's. If there's a spill, and I've used this analogy before, there's a spill on the aisle at 9 o'clock in the morning, and someone slips and falls by 9:15, you probably can't sue Kroger because Kroger didn't have time enough to know that the spill was there. However, if someone comes on the same aisle and the same spill is there and they slip and fall at 2 o'clock, then Kroger can be sued because whatever that insurance term is, they should have had the knowledge that it was, you know what I'm saying? It's just their responsibility within a certain period of time to know what's going on in their school. So that's saying.
And quick, And quick, the discipline, Chris, listen, go ahead.
Okay, so the fact is that it was brought up in the narration of the video that the Republican board members had suspected Cano of putting ballots in the trash and then retrieving them later. So to prevent that from happening with the work that they had worked on, they would tear their ballot in half so that they could not be used. So if that's the case, then that makes this an issue that should have been known by the time this situation occurred, because that says that there were other people who had knowledge and should have passed that knowledge on to the higher-ups like Howard Garcia, that this person appears to be doing something that is not right. So I say the recount is absolutely fair to ask for, in the sense that they did not move quickly to eliminate a potential, you know, breach of this process if they had knowledge that she wasn't doing what she was supposed to do.
Right.
And Carrie, I say, if we don't address this issue, then guess what you're going to do? If the more people who think about the people who are really locked into voting, you know, the voters who really are about voting, they it's in their blood. It is an issue. I don't know, even though it's not in nobody's, I don't know if anybody's higher up got their eyes on it or, you know, their thoughts on it, but you might turn people away who want to vote going forward. Mm-hmm. You know, if they realize all of this is going on, say, well, why am I voting? This is just, you know, why vote if they're going to do this? So my thing is this. I think it's important. I think, even though, like Chris said, we don't have the number, you know, kind of did a comparison of numbers, but still, we paid them to do a job. They're paid to do a job. And if you got the boldness to do that, when you know cameras on you, when you know you're under surveillance, somebody's there watching, quote unquote, and you just still doing it, then that means to me you don't give a damn.
You know? I disagree. I disagree with that. I'm gonna tell you what. Remember how people are on reality TV and they start off real nice and everything, but after a while they forget the camera's there and you see them doing some really crazy and stupid stuff after a while of working around a camera, you actually forget that the camera's there. You know what I'm saying? So could it be some of that where, you know, you you don't think the camera's gonna understand what you're doing anyway? So what, you know, I don't know. Because it doesn't make sense that they would know that the camera was there and then still conduct business the way they did, unless they thought that the camera or whoever was monitoring or could possibly go back and monitor the camera would not understand what was going on.
Well,
right.
I would disagree with that, Carrie, and I would just state that my feeling is from everything that we've dug into on this show, my impression is that these people that are public servants in Tarrant County have no sense of accountability. They have no fear. They have no fear of being checked. They have no fear of being confronted. And if they are confronted, it just turns into a gaslighting scheme. And on the other hand of it, just to expand on what I was telling you about the military, what we was talking about the discipline factor that goes into dealing with sensitive things. And I don't know if Adrian ever had an experience like this, but I've been to training problems where a whole brigade could be somewhere in the range of 10,000 troops, right? A whole brigade has been put on freeze. We'll go to a maneuver area as a whole brigade. And we would be done with our training, washing our tanks, thinking it's time to go get some pizza or whatever. And they would freeze us, bring us back out in buses and make us go back out in the back of trucks. And we would have to do hand because of one pistol, one discrepancy, one person failed to turn in a weapon in one company, and then we would be out there doing hands across the desert trying to and then it would turn up. We would be out there for most of a day, and then somebody would say, oh, it was laying on his in the barracks. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing. But that's the kind of thing. You got to have accountability, and if you don't have accountability, government falls to pieces quick.
I agree. You know, and speaking of, you know, Adrian saying, well, they just don't care. Well, there may be consequences, though, because, you know, the video does exist and people have viewed the video. Should these people go to jail if it is determined that what they did was something that could compromise the integrity of the election, maybe, you know, and I'm assuming just from the narration of the video that, you know, the person is saying that these actions on the part of Cano and Pankey literally could have cost, you know, somebody an election. Because if you're saying that 610 e-ballots were in there and you certified 608, which was not typical, that it's a possibility that in doing so, it could have swayed something one way or the other. So should they go to jail if they're found guilty of, you know, compromising the election?
Let me hit a point real quick. Crystal Mason, okay? I've studied that case crazy, and I'm not going to get into the details, but this is a citizen was a little bit unsure, confused, and basically she got told by somebody to do this. An election official told her this is a provisional ballot, blah, blah, blah. And so it didn't count. The vote didn't even wind up getting counted because they already knew she was scrubbed from the voter registration, so it didn't even freaking go through. She got 5 years for making a confused mistake, and she had no obligation. She wasn't trained. She didn't have briefings. She didn't have a roll call meeting every day before work talking about what the procedures are. She just showed up to vote one day and on a provisional ballot when technically she wasn't supposed to, whether she was aware of that or not, but she got 5 years in prison, and she's having to go through a tremendous ordeal trying to get it reversed. And it's still kind of, I'm waiting for that decision to come out of the Second Court of Appeals. It's already been heard on an argument, but that's all I'm saying. If you're going to nail a citizen for making that petty, for something that petty, then you need to nail a person who is a professional and has an absolute affirmative duty and an oath to take care of business professionally and in a disciplined manner.
What do you think, Adrian?
Hold that thought, Carrie. I'm with my friend and his family, so I'm gonna listen right now.
Okay,
I'm gonna mute my phone though. I'm gonna mute my phone.
Okay. This is the thing, y'all. There's too many angles right now, or too many, I shouldn't say angles, too many moving parts with the election process in Tarrant County. It's all very suspect, if you will. And so there was already questions whether or not the mail-in ballots remember the whole story that broke about the guy who was homeless who said he had, you know, gotten all these people to sign these ballots.
Right.
So
yes.
That was already in the air. The whole Deborah Peoples thing and whether or not that was true or not. That as though that wasn't enough. And then to add this to the equation, it just makes one wonder, like, really what the heck is going on? And, you know, just the candidates who put themselves out there to be ridiculed and to spend a lot of time their own money and to run themselves ragged, you know, for weeks knocking on doors and you know, trying to meet everybody and greet everybody and get their votes. And just the whole thing is exhausting. And so to to compromise it in any way is just not fair. It's just not fair. And so, you know, I'm going to say this, and I don't know these people. I've never met the Cat Cannell person, and I don't know Jocelyn Pankey. But I just think if someone did it, they didn't do it just because. Nobody's that dumb, you know, to just do it because. So I would think that the motivating factor would have been money. So I would think that if someone took money to compromise or throw an election, then they absolutely should serve some jail time for it. Now, what that number of years may be, I don't know, but I don't think 12 months is going to be suffice because, you know, you're taking away somebody's dream. You're taking away somebody who has a heart, you know, in a lot of these cases to be a public servant and to go out there and do their civic duty to serve their city. And so to take that away, you know, without regard to, you know, somebody's dream that you're crushing or taking someone out of public service who may not choose to ever go back again because of disappointment, I think absolutely somebody should pay for that. You know, I think at least 5 years.
And here's something that really gets me is you mentioned the whole Deborah Peoples thing, and there were a couple of other incidents and a whole lot of hype coming before what we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. And so we have Tim O'Hare, Ferris Wayburn, and Philip Sorrells coming together as a collective to sit here and spin off something, a new election integrity task force, and we got a whole lot of spiel about it, a whole lot of lip service about, in any case, either way, it's going to be non-political. Any kind of incident that's reported to us, we're going to come after it like flies on stink. And here we are, common class people with a podcast, and we're here having to break this stuff. And I don't know, but I've heard stories of people giving people a call at these offices of these particular individuals. Oh, what do you mean? And I'm just like, if you've got an election task force and you've got stuff surfacing on YouTube and calls coming in, you don't say, what do you mean? You say, you need to be proactive. You need to grease the wheels and get the gears going and figure this out, because there is so much, there's so many things that we could talk about, not just this particular video or this particular, there's a whole lot of fishy, funny, suspect things going on here. And there's some very, very obvious things that I've looked at with the Fort Worth City Secretary rubber stamping these financial audits, you know, of the campaign, of the candidates. It's just blatantly right then and there, you know. We heard what, two weeks ago about Jared Williams' $11,000 spending spree on himself from his campaign funds. I mean, that's the way it was worded, and now here we are, left in the dark. Election is over, and there's no accountability. There's no follow up. This is the same thing we get with, I mean, police shootings. We got told that there was a police officer named Raymond Lara that got arrested He was being busted for having sexual abuse with a child under 14. And then it just goes in the dark. Oh, he's on administrative duty. And then we just hear this. And then what happens is 5 years later, we get the same story, just like we did with Christopher Lowe. You got five officers that get fired. And then 5 years later, there's no follow-up. And then somebody like us or somebody like Manuel Mata or Harvey Freebird, or, you know, some of the auditors, they run into this officer that was supposedly fired, and we find out that four out of five of them came back to the force and got promoted and got back pay and are gang unit busters all over again.
Well, let's deal with the Voter Integrity Task Force.
Yeah,
that was headed up by Judge Tim O'Hare, DA Phil Sorrells, and Sheriff Wayburn. That said, I think they said they had seven complaints during early voting. Now, you know, the video. So the question is, we will see what this voter integrity task force is made out of with a situation like this, because they will have to investigate the complaint. Now, the crazy part and the irony in all of this is that particular election, you know, the Tarrant County Judge Tim O'Hare won in, and so did DA Phil Soros. So it will be very interesting to see how that turns out, because the races that were in the November 2022 election was the JP judges, the county commissioners, the Tarrant County judge, the DA, you know, all those races were in those elections. And so it will be very interesting how two people who were actually a part or candidates in that election will be forced to also investigate their election, and so, or that election, and will that be a conflict of interest?
Right.
You know what I mean? Because
you look at the common name here, the election task force. You mentioned that story about Gentry Cotton, committed to this homeless person who, I mean, it happened. It's just hype. They create a lot of schizophrenic hype about this, but they don't come forward with facts and they don't finish it, and then it just takes on it becomes its own beast. And really, if you got an issue, if you're a cop, and that police officer Gentry Cotton, in my view of that whole situation, was he was out there trying to do political baloney he was out there trying to interrogate people on political matters while he was on duty with the police body cam. You don't do that in uniform. That's not what the police aren't the freaking KGB.
Let's be clear on what we're talking about. We're talking about the video, not this video that's in question tonight, but he's referring to where Officer Cotton was involved in, was the video that surfaced about whether or not Deborah Peoples had paid some homeless man to go and sign up people's or get people's votes and you know, basically trick them in some type of way in the process. And so that's that video that involves Officer Cotton. And so, you know, y'all, there's so many moving parts to this. And back to the recount, which I forgot, Bob Willoughby is asking for a recount. And I think he has every right. He was a candidate in the May 6th election. And he's saying that based on the fact that this occurred, you know, it brings into question, you know, what happened May 6th. And he had a lot of reasons why he felt like a recount should take place. So, you know, who knows, y'all?
And here, I would like to say here from that story that we just talked about, you got this, what I was saying, the Fort Worth police officer Gentry Cotton out there politicking, trying to stir up hype about a stolen election, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that feeds into this election, because if you just think about it, the whole angle of his hype was in opposition to a person that was adverse to his interests as a Fort Worth POA member. You know, and so here what we got when we come into this election, we see how the same dimension plays out with the Fort Worth POA donating to all of these incumbents that are favorable to them. And then they've got Fort Worth police officers out there trying to stir up this hype and create, you know, while they're in uniform on being paid public dollars. And that's highly improper. That should have been. Gentry Cotton should have been the first one that the Integrity Task Force should have took out.
And, listen, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. Tonight we're talking about a video that has hasn't gone viral yet, Del, but it's making its rounds on social media concerning the October 20th, 2022 situation that occurred in the ballot boardroom at the Tarrant County Elections Headquarters. Basically, they're saying two people, Kat Cano and Jocelyn Pankey, basically did things that could be considered, you know, compromising the integrity of the election. And so tonight we're talking about how that is all going to play out, because if you're someone who was a part of the election, whether you're an election worker or whether you are a candidate or a voter, you want to know that the integrity was not compromised and that, you know, your vote counted, or that, you know, all the work that you did on the campaign trail, it was documented properly in the boardroom. And so tonight, with all that in question, could that possibly force a second election for what went down in Tarrant County in November of 2020, the Tarrant County election, and could that also force another election for the May 6th election that just took place here if the candidates and the voters began to question the process? So I don't know. I say it should, but, you know, I'm not the decision maker. Do you think it should?
Are we ready to move on to that Pena? Are we ready to move on to that Pena angle?
Well, we're talking about right now, though, could it force another election?
Yeah. One of the biggest issues that the election task force should be coming to terms with, that should be getting their radar on, is apparently there's been some complaints and some evidence demonstrated that individuals, due to the redistricting, individuals who lived in District 9, I believe, they showed up at the poll, and then when they got there, they were telling the people, this is my address, this is my, and they gave them the District 11 candidates to vote for, and they weren't voting. And so if there's a discrepancy in the redistricting with one person, that needs to be really cleared up, because it was a really bad story, because the guy basically told what the story was, that the guy told him, well, there's nothing I can do about it here. And I'm like, if your freaking redistricting line, if your ballots don't match your redistricting, if your ballot management system don't match your redistricting categorization of the citizens coming to vote, and this citizen's wanting to vote for a candidate named Mr. Pena, and he's not allowed to vote for him, how far does that problem go? I mean, that could be citywide with all the redistricting. How many multiple times did this same situation happen with people, people's ballots, them being forced to vote in it, are being basically told that they're in this district, they vote in this district, but they live in another district. If they had said, I live in District 9 and I want to vote in District 11, then they would have been put in jail. But here we have the system forcing people that live in District 9 to vote, forcing people to vote in District 11. So whoever the hell is forcing them to vote in the wrong freaking race ought to be put in jail too.
But I think, for correction, I believe that was District 8 that they were forced to vote in, and District 8 had an incumbent that was unopposed. So make sense. It's disheartening. It just is, because, you know, I'm somebody who typically votes the last day, you know, because I, okay, Adrian's hands right. Okay, are you ready, Adrian?
Yeah, you can go ahead.
Okay. So I'm somebody who typically votes the last day. And so, you know, I always vote last because I like to see, you know, how many people came in and, you know, that type of thing, and just, you know, get a feel for what happened, you know, during the whole election process. But I see when you go in there, you just expect everything to be like it's supposed to be. You expect a very polished and professional process. You don't expect to go in there and the election judge doesn't know what to do, or go in there and the poll workers don't know what to do. You just don't expect that. And if it is a problem, there should always be somebody that they can call. it should not be a situation in which, you know, the election just, you know, throws up his hands and tells you there's nothing he can do. Of course there's something he can do. And I can't believe that they told people that. You know. But anyway.
Hey, Carrie.
Your thoughts on
Carrie.
Uh-huh.
So we heard about the voter integrity task force, right? But they never did lay out what it is. They never did lay out what it is exactly that they're going to be doing. So my thing is this: where do we start from? And if people want to request, because I believe this stuff is archived. This is archived. Some, you know, they had archives of this. So do we start pulling more videos?
Videos, yeah.
To see what was going on in previous elections. We don't have to go, like you say, way, way back, but let's just say, like you say, the most recent elections, you know, since 2022 came up. Okay, do we go back to 2021 as well, where these two individuals were part of this same process to see, you know, what's the same behavior going on? Because, again, like you say, we're talking about voter integrity. So if we're going to hold the citizens to voting correctly, you know, making sure that they dot all their I's and cross all their T's before they cast the ballot, then we should hold the workers to the same standards as well. And my thing is this: you notice, I learned now when we were younger, we used to do stuff together, get in trouble together. But when I got older, they said, "Hey, if you're gonna do something, you do it alone because." Ain't like when my godbrother told me, his uncle said, "Hey, you do something, you do it alone because you ain't gonna tell on yourself. You're not gonna tell on yourself." So my thing is with these ladies, it's like I'm just looking at that. It's like they got, especially one when she took the ballots and started mixing them. You know, that's scary. You think about that. She took stacks of ballots and she put them in a space or ballots that was supposed to be discarded, and she just literally laid them all out, mixed them, going through them, and just, I say, wow, what boldness do people have to just disregard everything and just say, hey, let me do this, you know? And then you know what else they'll hold her to? They'll hold her to the fact that, you know, I think on her Facebook, because they shared it in the video, how she identifies herself. This radical
socialist
progressive,
or
however so they will hone in on that just to say, yeah, you kind of, who is this person and was she vetted? Are these people vetted? That's another question. And it goes back to Haida Garcia. It goes back to Haida Garcia real quick. What was that discussion? What really was it, egos, or did Mr. O'Hara say, hey, Haida, something came up. We give you a chance to resign, or you can ride it you can ride this train to the wheels fall off. Either or. And
you know,
he said, you know what?
Yeah. You know, one thing that stuck out to me, y'all, and I ain't pulling a race card, but I ain't see no black people in here.
Yeah, I know. I got you. I know where you're going, Carrie, because I watched it too.
I'm just being honest, y'all. I ain't see no black people in the room. And you know, I don't understand stuff like that. I don't understand how, you know, are we less honest than other people? I mean, like, how were the ballot board members chosen? And if Ms. Cano had been suspect in the past, why was Ms. Cano asked to return? That part. And y'all listen,
and
there's a lot of folks on the phone lines tonight. And if you got something to say, we listen. We ain't judging nobody. We just reporting the news. And we're just commentating on what we saw. So, you know, if you happen to be one of the two ladies that we were talking about, or we are talking about, or, you know, if, you know, somebody called Haida Garcia, we'd love to talk to him too. I'm just saying, if you'd like to chime in tonight, all you have to do is press 1, and I will take your call. If you are on this line,
I will.
And you, wait a minute, let me finish, Chris.
Yeah, I got
you. If you're on the phone line, and you want to say something, all you have to do is press 1, and then I will see that you're asking to speak, and I will come to you. And I see one person has. So we're going to go to 682-308. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk What Works.
Hey, Terry, right?
Right.
I'm pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is actually Kat. Hi.
Hi, Kat. How are you, Miss Cano?
Yes. It's Cano. It's a Hispanic name, but I also take Kano, like volcano. I grew up pronouncing it that way, so I don't say it right either.
Okay.
But yeah, you can just call me Kat.
Hey, Kano.
Okay.
Thank you for calling me. Thank you for calling me.
Yeah, and thank you for reaching out to me. And if you can hear noise in the background, and I apologize, it's just my cat being, you know, a little bit selfish and wanting attention.
Okay.
I really wanted to thank you for reaching out to me, because the people who posted the video didn't reach out to me beforehand to ask for an explanation or anything like that. They just posted it. And I really appreciate that you reached out to me on Facebook to give me an opportunity to be part of this conversation. So I want to be clear about who I am and what my credentials are. I am a Democrat. The thing that was posted on my Facebook was what was on my Facebook. I consider myself radically progressive. So I'm an inclusivist. I'm for Black Lives Matter. I'm for women's rights and pro-choice and things like that. I don't identify with the establishment Democratic Party, but I also consider myself to have libertarian values, because I don't think that the government has any place telling us what we can and can't do as long as we're not hurting anyone else. But I did change my Facebook thing to say, literally, 3 raccoons in a trench coat, because what you post on Facebook isn't necessarily representative of who and what you are. A lot of it is just silliness.
Right.
But I am an appointed representative of the Tarrant County Democratic Party. I have been approved by the County Executive Committee, which is the governing body of the county party. And all ballot board workers, just like other election workers, we are put on a list submitted by the county parties that goes to the election commission, the election board. And the election board, it's their job to look at that list and to appoint all of these people. And I have been working for ballot board since 2020.
Wow.
Jocelyn is a libertarian. She's appointed by the Libertarian Party in Tarrant County. And we are friendly, but we're not friends outside the ballot board. Like, I haven't been to her house. She hasn't been to my house. We don't hang out and get coffee or anything like that. But I would consider us friends, as in friendly colleagues. The video that was posted, a lot of it was taken out of context, and some of it was just flat-out lies. It's very upsetting. I consider it, and I believe the law would consider it, defamation of character. And it's just hurtful, because I consider myself to be a very honest person, and my objective with ballot board has always been to make sure that all voters have an opportunity to vote and to have their votes counted. And we go to we go the extra mile to make sure that, you know, we give voters the opportunity to make sure that their ballots are counted and that all of our processes are documented. There is never a time when we're not aware that we're on camera. I don't love the camera personally for exactly this reason, because people who don't understand the process can take it out of context and use it to make it appear like something's happening that isn't happening. But it's ridiculous to suggest that we were trying to commit illegal actions, knowing full well that there was a camera filming us the whole time. If you watch the video, you'll notice that we do have a conversation with David Lambertson, who's our presiding judge, and that he is present in the room. And in fact, when I'm going through papers, he is watching me during part of that time. And there's a couple of points where I show him a paper that I'm looking at. So I'm going to ask if you have any questions about what I've just said, and then I'm going to tell you what actually happened.
Okay. You know, if I heard you correctly, and I've been taking notes as you were talking, I understood you to say that you were a Democrat and that you were radically progressive. You're for Black Lives Matter, women's rights, pro-choice, don't identify with the establishment of the Democratic Party. You were appointed by the Democratic Party, and you've been doing this since 2020. Did I get
yes.
that right? Okay, great.
Yes.
Okay, so and you said Jocelyn identifies as a libertarian.
She does, and she's appointed by their party, and we don't have anything to do with each other, although mm-hmm. there is one caveat. The March primary last year, mm-hmm. I put Jocelyn on my list, the list that I submitted for ballot board clerks, which is the Democratic list, and she had to get clearance from her county party to do that. And the reason I did it is because Jocelyn is absolutely excellent at keeping track of paperwork and documentation. And I have ADHD. I am not great at keeping track of paperwork. I try, but Jocelyn is truly outstanding. And I wanted to have an alternate judge who, like, would be really on point with all of that. Because, as you may know, after SB1 passed, we had a lot of new laws about, like, how we're supposed to be keeping notes and contacting voters and stuff like that. And I wanted mm-hmm. someone who I could trust to be there in case I had to be absent for whatever reason. So for that election and only that election, she was on the Democratic list. But just so people know, the Republican judge also asked Jocelyn to serve. And the only reason that she was on my list is because I got to her first.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. I asked her like a week before he did. And if I hadn't, she might have gone on the Republican board. And if you check their list, they will appoint, they will put libertarians on their list as well. And part of the reason that we do that is because the way the law works for appointing members of ballot board is a little bit convoluted. So mm-hmm. we're trying to actually be inclusive by having people from a bunch of different parties. So if the libertarians for some reason did not have a candidate in an election, we still want to try to include them. And so we put them on our list and make sure that they have representatives in the ballot board room. So it's not just being run by the two parties, because personally, I don't like the two-party system.
Gotcha. So will Jocelyn come in tonight as well? Or is she?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Will Jocelyn call in tonight as well?
I don't believe so. I actually, the reason I called in is because I've been talking with some other ballot board members and Pam Young. I don't know if you know Pam Young, but she's actually on the ballot board from United Fort Worth. She's actually on the ballot board, and she suggested I might want to call in, and I do appreciate the chance to say my side of the story.
Well, thank you, Pam, for having her call in. I appreciate that. You know, the thing is, I try to show balance, Kat, I really do. And I probably would do exactly as you were doing, because it's easy for someone to take something, you know, especially as well narrated as that video was, and believe everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying I don't know the truth, so I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't know the truth. But the person who, mm-hmm. the Progressive for Liberty, that narrated that video, you know, they were very professional in the way they did it. So I can see mm-hmm. someone taking that video and go, oh, that's what happened. That's actually, you know, I heard it before, you know, I saw it. And so, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I probably would too, like you are doing. I would probably try to get out ahead of it and at least tell my side so that people will see, you know, or hear my side of the story as well.
Yeah.
I really would. Yeah. And so can you tell us what happened? What are we seeing that we missed in the video?
Yes, I can. And before I do, I want to be clear about something else. I intend to report this video to the Tarrant County Elections Integrity Task Force on Monday. I will probably try to go in person and maybe even talk to the sheriff. I don't know if they'll let me, because I feel that this was done in an attempt to create doubt about the election. But there's also a problem in this country, and especially in Tarrant County, with election workers being threatened. And I feel I do feel unsafe now. I feel like this is harassment. I've also received a Facebook comment about how they're investigating other allegations, and I don't know who that came from. I reported and deleted it, but I feel like there is a targeted campaign of harassment that might be beginning. So I don't want to say anything that I don't remember clearly, and I don't want to spread anything that might end up being a misremembrance that muddies the waters in the future. So I'm only going to tell you the things I would tell anyone and the law enforcement officers. And if there is an investigation, which I think there probably should be, because if like stuff like this was reported, we want to get to the bottom of it. I fully intend to cooperate with so I also don't want to say anything that might impede an investigation.
Okay.
Can I step in, Carrie?
No, Chris, let her finish. I'm sorry, let her finish. Go ahead.
Okay. So what has happening in the video is on that day, we had a problem with our ballot count. At the beginning of the day, when we accept new ballots, we compare all of the ballots against the list of ballots that we've been given. And that's just so that we can say, hey, you told us that you gave us Bob's ballot, and Bob's ballot is definitely in this batch, or it's not in this batch. It's an extra step of verification that is not required. No one has ever asked us to do it, but Jocelyn and I actually started doing it because we wanted to be extra thorough that what we were telling people could be verified. And that morning, that didn't get done. I don't remember why it didn't get done. I don't know the specifics, but that day there was a problem at the end of its day, and the number of ballots that we were supposed to have was it was something was weird about it. So what we did is we took the ballots out and we started going through what's called the batch paperwork. The batch paperwork is that list that I said. It's just a list of ballots saying the name of the voter, the ID of the voter, like not the identification number, but the certificate number that you have on your voter registration card, like Kat's number 12 in the system and Jocelyn's number 13 and David's number 14. And that's how we identify voters. It doesn't have anything to do with personal identifiable information like a driver's license or social security number. It's just the voter ID number. It also has the serial number of the ballot, and that's how we tie each ballot to each voter. And what happens is when we get the ballot, they give us multiple copies of that paperwork. We usually keep one with the transfer paperwork, the chain of custody form that says we received these ballots, and then we keep the rest of them with the ballots themselves in those mail transfer boxes. So what we did is we took the batch paperwork out, and because we had a miscount, I think I was looking for, and again, I'm not sure about this, because this was, and the reason I'm not sure is because this was an ordinary ballot board day. There was nothing really special about it. We have mix-ups like this all the time, and part of our job is to sort through it and document it and make sure everything is okay. So there was nothing weird about this day that would make it stick out in my memory. But I think what I was doing is looking for the batch paperwork, and because there was something I couldn't find, and I was trying to make the total come out, and I didn't know where it was. And I thought someone earlier that day might have accidentally put it in the scrap bin. So I was looking through the scrap bin to see if I could find it. So the copies that I'm comparing are actually, they're not ballots. They're batch paperwork. And again, we have multiple copies of this list. We have the copies that came with the original transfer sheet and the copies that come with the ballot. And if you watch the video, you can see on the table behind me that's sort of in the middle of the room, I'm laying out a bunch of papers, like sort of on top of each other. And what those are is sets of batch paperwork in numerical order. So I can see that we have like batch one, batch two, batch three, batch four. And that's all I was doing with those, is looking for that batch paperwork. I don't think that I found it in the scrap bin, but I can't be sure. And in that video, when it looks like I'm mixing and matching things, what I'm actually doing is putting like the copy of batch, you know, batch one next to the copy of batch two. And then later when it looks like I'm mixing them up and taking them out and putting things in the trash, That is literally what I'm doing. I'm taking the batch that I pulled out of the trash, and I have batch one that I had from the original record, and I say, okay, I definitely have all the sheets of paper in this batch. I'm not missing anything. And so I put the trash batch back in the trash bin, and I keep the original document. I want to clarify as well that what people are calling the trash bin, that is what we call it. But it is not actually trash. We are required by law to keep all election records. Anything that we have that is a record of anything we did in an election, including notes, like post-it notes, if we put a post-it note on a stack of ballots that says there's 54 ballots in a batch, we have to keep that piece of paper. And it all gets stored with the election records. So we call it the trash or the scrap bin to indicate that it's not something that's actively being used, like duplicate copies or things that we make copies of and we don't need them anymore. But it is not trash. It does not get thrown away. No ballots ever go in that bin. And any records with personally identifiable information on them go in a separate folder or bin that is marked shred, so that we keep that as well, but it does not become part of the election records or anyone can just find it.
Wow. Oh, well. Well, let's just for clarity, because we're trying to understand. Okay, so in the video, when the narrator says that some of the Republicans had noticed that you had put things in the trash before and taken them out, so they tear theirs up. What were they referring to? Because you just said you don't throw anything away, so why are they shred or tearing ballots?
Well, it's not ballots. It's only notes and, like, paperwork. It's not – it's like if I make two copies of a piece of paper and I don't need one, that would go in the scrap bin. But we never put ballots in there. Anything that is a ballot gets stored as a ballot in a sealed box. It is part of election records. We never throw any ballots in there, ever.
So when they said – I don't have the video in front of me. But I thought they said that they tore ballots to make sure that they were not reused or something like that. So that's not what they said.
No, they were talking about some people tearing up paper when they put it in the trash bin or the scrap bin. Okay. That is correct. Some of the people on the ballot board, and again, I don't know who made this video and no one approached me beforehand, so I don't know who these anonymous complainants are. I wish that they had come and talked to me to, you know, clarify what's going on, but oh well, it is what it is. Some people do tear their scrap paper, and I actually had a conversation with someone else on the ballot board about this last week, because I was like, well, why did you tear that up? We might need it, because sometimes you put something in that bin and it ends up, oh wait, I actually, that was my only copy and I need to get it back. But one of the reasons that was given to me is that it's confusing for people if there's just paper sitting around and they don't know where it came from or why it's there, which I can understand. So we have different procedural habits, and in the future, or if someone had raised this issue to us that day or that week at some point during that election, we would have sat down. This is what we always do whenever we have a problem. We could have had a discussion about it as a group, and decided, you know what, from here on out, we will go ahead and not put anything in the trash bin until, you know, we're done with it for the week. And then at that point, we'll tear it in half or mark it, you know, not useful or do something else. We could have had a discussion about it so that we would have handled it in a way that everyone would have been comfortable with. But yeah, there's no ballots in there. We do, sometimes people do shred it. I don't know who had that complaint because no one ever said anything to me about, well, how come you're looking for stuff in there? But that is a legitimate difference.
What department does that guard work for? Is he a security person or does he work for the Tarrant County Sheriff's Department?
So that deputy he's a deputy with the Tarrant County Sheriff's Office. We're required to have a deputy on the premises while we're working in ballot board. That was another thing that was brought up in the video, is that at one point it looks like Jocelyn and I are working alone in the room, and an elections employee comes and is like, hey, how come you're working alone? And that is inaccurate, but in a in a sort of weird way, it is also sort of true. What happened was that room, if you ever go down to the elections office, you'll see that, it, and I don't know if you can actually see this in the videos, but it's surrounded by windows. So there's a hallway and a break room directly across from the ballot board room. And there's a couple of desks, and that's where the vending machines and stuff are. So sometimes our deputy will step outside the room. And we have been told that it's not a requirement for him to be physically in the ballot board room, but he has to be on the premises near us. So at that point, when that when that elections employee came to talk to us, what she was asking us is, hey, where's your deputy? Because she didn't realize he was on the premises. She thought he had gone. But that's when you see him, like, come in right after. It's because – and we stopped work when she came and complained to us – or not complained, but, like, was questioned us. So she came in and was like, hey, where's your deputy? And we were like, well, he's just stepped outside, but we were told we could keep working as long as he was on the premises. And she went and found him, and I believe may have talked to one of the – either the elections administrator or the deputy administrator to clarify what was going on. And when our deputy came back in, we continued working.
Okay. So, because, you know, this person appeared to be not really engaged in the process at all in terms of if he is there, I'm sure he has a responsibility to be observing something. And most of the time we noticed that he was just on his phone or talking on the phone or texting on the phone or playing with the phone. He did not seem to be observing anything.
Right. I can't actually speak to that. I don't know really anything about like the reasoning behind the law that we have to have a deputy present. We consider him part of our ballot board family, and, you know, sometimes we get in different deputies, and we try to be friendly and accommodating to them all and explain parts of the process. So, like, when we first got a deputy, we were sort of walking him through, like, everything that's going on. But it really isn't, like, it doesn't require a deputy to be watching us, because a lot of, you know, if you just say, we're going to send you a deputy, the deputy is not trained in elections law, right? So the deputy doesn't necessarily know what's going on unless we walk him through it first, and then he's like, well, now I see. So the deputy is not there to enforce elections law, to my understanding. Other people might have a different understanding of this. My understanding is that the deputy is there to protect us and, you know, to prevent any sort of interference, or, like, if another member of the ballot board went to the deputy and said, hey, it looks like that person's doing something wrong, then the deputy would step up and talk to the judge and talk to the elections administrator and say, hey, what's going on here? And that's never happened for us.
So were you working in a supervisory capacity, or were you just a regular worker like everyone else?
During the October election, I was the alternate judge. If the presiding judge is not able to work or not present at the site, then the alternate judge steps into the judge role. We have a presiding judge there most of the day. That's David. So during that period when the judge is there, I work as a clerk. That's my role. That's the official legal role. David, when he left for the day, I became the one in charge. So if there had been like a transfer of ballot that came into the room, I would have signed off on them and something like that. So it's a sort of a gray area. David treated it like now I'm like he left, so now I'm in charge. But when he came back, if he had come back, or then when we came back the next day, David would have been.
So let me ask you, so that everybody can be clear, because all of this really, you know, those candidates, I'm sure, have a lot of questions. So everything that was in the room, every piece of paper, are you saying, or did I understand you to say, it can be retrieved at some point if people wanted to read the what you all were looking at that day.
Yes, it can. It's part of the official election records, and it gets stored with the election records. And this is the first year, well, not this year. Last year, after SB 1 was passed, that was the first year we were required to keep all of our records. But in general, we have always attempted to keep some sort of documentation to show what we did. This actually brings up a good point, is that the end of the video, and I really do want to address this so people understand, the two pieces of paper that Jocelyn and I removed from the room, they are not election records. They are not ballots. They do not contain any personally identifiable information or any information about specific ballots. What they are is, I don't know what the official name is, but we refer to it as the end of day report or the ballot status summary report. And what it is a table, like a spreadsheet table, that has one column that lists a ballot status. And this is a little technical, so bear with me. It has okay, RJ for rejected ballots. PR for processing ballots. Those are ballots that are still waiting to go through signature verification. And then it has a bunch of different codes that indicate other ballot statuses. Like X is for ballots that were canceled because a voter that went to vote, they requested a mail ballot, but they went to vote in person. Or we have what we call V8, which is a specific type of ballot that is in pending. It's in what we call curable status. Like someone forgot to put their ID number on it, so that ballot can't be approved, but it can't be rejected yet. So it just lists all the different statuses of the ballots and how many ballots are in each status. And that is actually public information that is posted at the end of the day by Tarrant County Elections. So what it is it's just a condensed form of, you know, what we're going to see when that report gets updated at the end of the day. And we use it because, I mean, you know why poll watchers are good, because they, you know, sit there and make sure everything is in order. We view our role as similar to that. So sometimes we get that printout, and at the end of the day, we're like, yep, this matches. It's literally just a verification tool. That's all we were doing. We don't do it every time. We haven't done it at all this election. But I have offered that document to other members of the ballot board and have offered it to poll watchers as well.
Okay, two questions. But, I thought the rule was that you couldn't take anything from the room.
Well, I mean, that's not true. We do take things from the room sometimes, but again, it's not part of the election records. During the primaries, we had written our own letters to send to voters to help explain what the process of is for carrying a ballot, because the Secretary of State one is a little confusing. And during that time, like, we took copies of those letters home for editing and things like that. We don't take official election records out of the room. Anything that has to do with, like, the actual work we've done, we don't take out of that room. But there's no specific law saying that you can't take a piece of paper out of the room. And again, the piece of paper that we had is publicly available information. It's just in a different form. It actually doesn't even have the name of the election or even the time and date that it was printed on it. It's just a spreadsheet that shows numbers and the status of ballots, which you can download each day from the elections office. And the report that the elections office prints out actually has way more information, because it includes, like, the name of the voter and stuff like that.
You know, in the video, the narrator mentioned something about you tapped into the Secretary of State's website and did some reports. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, I can. So what happened in October was that we had been having a discussion, the people who were doing the ballot curing process. And I was not involved in that in October, and I haven't been involved in that in this election, by the way, just so everyone knows. The team that was doing ballot curing was having a discussion about, like, what the curing website actually looks like, because we have never been able to see it, because we don't have mail-in ballots, and you can only access it if you have a mail-in ballot. And we spent all last year talking about the problems with the system and how it didn't make sense for them to expect us to sort of help voters get through this and then not give us any information about it. So several times during the year, myself and two Republican members of the ballot board kept going to election staff to say, hey, can we see the system? Is there some way you can log into the system so we can see what voters are seeing? Yes, I was definitely involved in that, but I was not involved in it alone. It was a team request. We wanted to see what the system looked like. So when we were talking to a voter on the phone and saying, hey, you need to go here and cure your ballot, or writing them an email, we could say, you need to log into the system, and then you need to go down to the left-hand corner and press a button, because I still don't know what it looks like. And what happened in October is one of the people, I believe I know who it was, but I'm not going to call her out, was saying something about, you know, it's so frustrating, you can't see the system, we can't help people. And I pulled it up on one of the computers. I didn't log into it because you have to have, you know, I don't have a ballot, and you have to have a ballot in front of you or personal information about the voter to log into it. And so all I did was pull up the login screen from the Secretary of State website to show me what it looked like. And then we had a discussion about, I don't know anything beyond this. I think there's like a button that you press based on the instructions that I read and some conversations I'd had with people from the Secretary of State's office. But that was it. And someone else was like, how come you can pull it up on that computer? We can't pull it up on this computer. And I said, I don't know, because I don't know. At the beginning of that election, we had a conversation about it, myself and the presiding judge and Jocelyn. And we had agreed that that website shouldn't be on Tarrant County ballot board computers. Like, it should be blocked. So I tried it, and it turned out that it wasn't blocked. I don't know if it was only blocked on some computers on accident. That's a question for the IT department. But I agree that that website should not be accessible by the ballot board, because it does create like it creates the possibility of this kind of like accusation. So it should be just blanket banned. But I have had other discussions about like, you know, why we have certain things banned. One of the things that's banned from our elections room currently, or our ballot board room, is the election code, like the actual printed election code that the Secretary of State has online to look up. So we don't, we can't even reference the election code if we need to. So that's an IT department question. Like, there's some weirdness in how they've arranged things, but I am 100% on board. It's like there needs to be certain restrictions on what ballot board can access. And as well, one of the things that I've been trying to advocate for is that we have access to a lot of personally identifiable information, but we don't have to sign any kind of like non-disclosure or confidentiality agreement. And I worked for the census in 2020, and everyone who worked on the census had to sign a confidentiality form saying that they would not misuse or record any or retain any kind of personally identifiable information. We take that very seriously as part of our job, but there's no requirement for us to be like, yep, I promise I won't do anything bad with it. And I think that's a problem as well. I think we should have sort of stricter regulations on not necessarily what we're doing, but on like protecting voters and voter information.
I think I remember on that video that the narrator said that when it was discovered that you were happened into the Secretary of State's website, that Haider Garcia blocked it after that point. Is that correct?
No. Well, I can't speak to what Haider did. I know at the beginning of the October election, before the contents of the video happened, we sat down and we actually have a written policy saying that that website's going to be blocked from our computers and we're not going to be able to access it. And I didn't understand why at first, because at first I was like, well, what if we need to try to explain it to a voter? But, you know, David's the presiding judge, and David was very adamant about, no, we need to have it blocked. And at this point, I mean, I really agree with him. So there was a request made to Tarrant County Elections to make sure that it was blocked. And to my understanding is that that kind of blocking or unblocking a website comes from the IT department is supposed to do it. I don't know why the specific computer that I used in October to show someone what that website looks like, I don't know why that didn't have it. I don't know if someone went to Hyder after that happened and said, hey, this needs to be blocked, and then Hyder had it blocked. I don't know. I do know that we have not accessed that website from the – well, while I have been in the ballot boardroom, that website has not been accessed at all since then. We can't vouch for anyone else. We have never used it to cure a voter's ballot, and that would be unethical and illegal. Like, for me, and for me, it's really the unethical part. It's just not right. We're there to protect voters and to make sure that voters are able to have their vote counted, and if there's something wrong that the voter can fix, to help the voter fix that. But we're not there to do anything else than that. So that's really, and that's really why this is a hurtful accusation, because I take that very seriously.
Okay. Another thing that was, I was not clear on, is when the narrator says that the November 2022 election had 3,230 e-ballots, and allegedly the November 2022 election had 610. However, he spoke to the fact that the email federal ballots, basically a lot of them appear to be locally postmarked. So can you explain to us what's going on with that?
I actually can't. I don't have the statistics in front of me, so I don't know how many ballots came in and how many ballots didn't, and I don't know how many e-ballots we had. I don't think we had 3,000 e-ballots, because an e-ballot is an overseas.
That was 2020. But that was 2020.
2020? Okay, in 2020.
And I think
it's possible
this one.
But I don't know. We normally do not have very many e-ballots, because an e-ballot is an overseas voter who requests a ballot by mail. That ballot is emailed to them, and then they print it out, mark it themselves, and they have to mail it back to us. I don't know anything about the postmarking or anything. That's not our job to question that. What our job is to verify that the voter was eligible to receive a ballot, and that they were actually the ones who returned their ballot by doing the signature verification.
I think what they said was that there were 610 e-ballots that came in, and you all certified 608, which is not common, and that most basically had no history of ever voting in Tarrant County, and that most of them had local postmarks. So with that
is your question is, to me, does that seem weird?
Would that seem odd?
Because we don't look at the postmarks, I can't say whether or not that was accurate. But I will say the e-ballot, this doesn't seem right to me. Like, I don't think that claim is true. I don't know how many e-ballots we got, but 600 does seem like a large number. But in a federal election, it might not be. We keep statistics on all of this, but I don't know them all off the top of my head. But they are available for anyone who wants to go look for them. To have such a high number of, so to have a high approval rate on e-ballots is not weird. And the reason that it's not weird is because those are generally overseas voters who've gone through the trouble of requesting a ballot. So, they're actually motivated voters. They want to vote that ballot. So to have a high approval of e-ballots is not strange at all. The question of these voters, they don't have history, is explainable, but it does seem weird if you're not familiar with how the system works. So when most of our overseas ballots, the e-ballots, they come from military voters or spouses. They're called FPCA ballots. That's a federal postcard application. And an FPCA acts as a voter registration and a ballot request in one form. And the way that the system works is that those those voters might have history, but the FTCA is handled as a separate voter entry. And this question was raised, it was raised in October, but I was not present for it because, as I said, I was out. I had kidney stones for like 6 weeks, so I wasn't there for most of that election. This election, it was raised again. And what we did is we took the list of ballots and we went to one of the election worker, election staff's office, and we looked at the voter history. And some people had like voter history in Tarrant County, and a couple of people did not. But that's not a legal reason to reject that. It's not a legal reason for us to reject that ballot. We can't say, oh, someone has decided to register in Tarrant County, but they've never registered here before, so we're going to not accept their ballot. That could be a first-time voter. We don't know. We don't have that information. So legally, we can't say just because you've never voted here before, you can't vote this ballot. But without looking through the system for every single ballot, and that's not something that we have the ability to do in the ballot boardroom, we don't have any way of knowing whether or not an FTCA ballot has a history in Tarrant County. We just can't do it.
So whose face does the postmark come across? Because it seems to me if you're saying that the e-ballots are for people who are overseas, then how in the heck are they overseas and the postmark is showing local? I mean, that's a red flag.
Without knowing what materials they're referencing, and in fact, there's no way that they could know what was referenced, like what materials were received in October 2022, because those materials are under lock and seal for, I believe, 22 months. I'm not sure about that, but they're under seal for quite a while. So they won't actually be available for examination until much later. So when we get e-ballots, they are legitimately from overseas. We get, you know, ballots in from, you know, Thailand and Switzerland and Germany and stuff. And you can tell because they're like in big FedEx envelopes and they have, you know, addresses in foreign countries and they have foreign postage and stuff like that. So I don't know what this claim is about. I don't know if someone misinterpreted something or if they outright fabricated the story, but that does not meet my experience. Like usually when it's an overseas ballot, you're like, yep, that's, oh, look at this interesting, you know, post stamp. We don't have those here. To me, it sounds like a fictitious claim and I can't really address it without further information on the part of whoever made it up.
Okay, back to the papers that you all took out of the ballot room. They said that they were taken out on October 20th, and they were also taken out on October 19th. What was the purpose of taking them out?
Sometimes at the end of the day, we use it to reconcile our counts and then also to compare to what the Tarrant County Elections posts on the website and to prepare for what we're going to be having to do. And I had a discussion with David about this, our presiding judge. And so Jocelyn and I are huge nerds, and we sort of just like to keep tabs on what's going on. And because that paper lists like how many ballots will need to be processed, how many ballots we have that need to be cured, and how many ballots that might be in what we call question status, which is ballots that the ballot board needs to go back and look at because we couldn't agree whether the signature matched or something like that. It helps us sort of prepare for what work we're going to be doing. So we know that like the next day we're going to be doing, oh, we have 30 ballots in QS and we need to make sure we get through those so we can contact voters if we need to, stuff like that. But when I had this conversation with David the other day, we agreed that, yeah, we're huge nerds, but we probably shouldn't do that anymore because it looks weird. And I totally understand that, and I agree with it. It looks weird, but it's not nefarious. It's not malicious. There's nothing, there's nothing we could use on that piece of paper to do anything with, really.
So did you work the May 6th election cycle?
This last one? Yes, I did.
Okay, gotcha. So did you remove
– I was not there the whole time either.
Did you all remove documents this time as well?
No.
Okay. So would you understand if people were concerned enough to ask for a recount?
I understand that people were concerned enough to ask for a recount. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you think
I'm sorry. Could you clarify what recount you're talking about? There's been several requests for him.
Bob Willoughby, who's on the line tonight, was a candidate in the last election, the May 6th election. And uh-huh. after he viewed the video, he feels that a recount is necessary for even the May 6th election because he felt like the integrity of the election was compromised by, you know, your actions. Let me ask you this. Was Jocelyn Patke work in the May 6th election cycle?
No.
Okay, so she did not. Okay, but you did.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, Bob can explain to you why he wants to work, ask for a recount. As a matter of fact, he's on the line with his hand raised. But let me ask you before I go to Bob, are you concerned at all that this may result in, like, you all getting in some trouble for what was shown on the video?
I don't think that I'm going to get, or Jocelyn or anyone is going to get in legal trouble because we didn't do anything wrong. But I am concerned that it's going to cause people to sort of spread misinformation about what it is because they don't actually understand what the process is, which, mm-hmm. I mean, is fair. I mean, if you don't know what the process is, it's really easy to misinterpret. But I think that this was done maliciously. And again, some of the, you know, Facebook interactions I've had, I feel like people may be intentionally targeting me. And so I am actually very afraid that, you wow. know, Haider Garcia got death threats against him and his family.
Wow.
I don't want to subject myself to that kind of harassment, but I really do believe in the, you know, the elections process and that it's really important to safeguard it and to have transparency and documentation and to show what we're doing. And that's what I've always worked for. And there's a lot of people who want to, you know, try to restrict voting rights and have us go back to paper only, you know, hand-counted paper ballots, which is, it's not going to be really possible for Tarrant County because the time and the expense of that is really extreme. They want to take away our voting centers and put us back to precinct-only voting so that it, and some people are even suggesting that we only have voting on election day. And that's going to be really damaging for people who, you know, they have to work. They can't get time off to go to the polls. And it's going to create confusion because people are used to vote centers. And I'm really upset by this whole thing. So I think that it's damaging for the voters of Tarrant County, and I'm worried for my own safety and peace of mind, as well as my mom, whom I live with. And she's like 70, and she's worried about me and what's going to happen as well.
Okay, my two co-hosts have a question for you, and then, or I know Chris does, and then we're going to go to Bob, who's had his hand raised for a while. Christopher, what was the question?
Well, I got one big question. So you worked this election because it's been very ambiguous what we've been getting from the powers that be. Was Haider Garcia in command, walking through, in control of supervising this election?
I don't know really what that would mean. Haider doesn't have any authority over the ballot board. Haider is the elections administrator. Troy Havard is the deputy elections administrator. Haider was present for this election. Troy was also present for this election. Haider doesn't have anything to do with the work we do other than he's statutorily required to provide us with information and materials and stuff that we need to conduct our work.
Right.
So, I mean, yes, Haider was the elections administrator, but I kind of feel like the implication is that Haider's in there micromanaging everything, and that's never been the case, and that was not the case this time. The TCE election staff are really well-trained. They all have their jobs and their roles, and Haider is the elections administrator, but he's not in there, like, telling people, oh, you need to do this or you need to do that or anything like that.
No, I was just trying to clarify whether his hands, I mean, whether he was the official person on the scene doing the walkthroughs, making sure that the equipment was good, you know, and everything this year, because of the resignation, we kind of got, was he on vacation or not? He was the one.
Hyder is EA until June 23rd, which is the end of the runoff period. And then Troy Hafford will be the deputy EA, who will serve until a replacement is found.
And here's the only other thing I want to say. You know, I completely understand the hype and everything that goes on, but what we have here is a problem because it can't be denied. We've seen this video, this particular video, which I haven't even analyzed really extensively, but I watched some video. I tuned in right around the 7 o'clock, 6:30, 7 o'clock, during this election, and all of the cameras that were available to be viewed, the ballot room, the counting room, or whatever, you know, and what I see, and it's just like what we've seen in this video, that it's a non-sterile environment, and there's not a lot of control going on. There's a lot of things that are being said. You all have badges. So that means accessibility to that room should be controlled. And what mm-hmm. I've seen this year, I've seen at 6:30 or at right before the election, I've seen people, the elections, I don't know, I guess maybe your kind of coworkers or whatever, they're in these rooms and they carry in their lunch pails in there. They're carrying their phones in there. They're sitting down eating lunch, scrambling around, having fun with all this, everything going on. And, you know, that just doesn't, I mean, that's going, I do understand how you feel this is personal and everything, and I'm not blaming you personally. But what I will say is I completely disagree because I've said that, you know, and like I said, we were talking about the sheriff's deputy. The sheriff's deputy is there because that is a sterile environment. That is a controlled environment. And, I mean, I'm not sure how extensive or what the protocol his training is, but I'm sure if he sees something funny going on that, you know, that's the purpose he's there for. I don't know. But that's all I see. Everything that I see is just not – and, I mean, some of the stuff that you said, and it's not personal against you, it just means this friendly environment, you got teams working together, so then what you have in that case is you have groupthink developing, and you got, I think that it's just not a very, it's not a very well-disciplined situation. That door should be closed. You know, people shouldn't be standing around, walking around freely. I mean, there should be a step process, a methodical process, especially if it's going to be on camera. I feel you, you know. With these cameras and stuff, I mean, all over. I mean, the cops are watching us every time we stop at an intersection. So I'm just saying that's just the nature of the beast now. So people are going to ask questions. And what I do know, people were going out that should not have been going in and out. Like I said, if you're bringing lunch pail, the only thing that you should be able to bring in there into a sterile environment is a bottle of water and any kind of – because I've worked in a – I mean, it's like a jail. It should be like a jail, or it's a bank, you know. And so, I mean, it's that important. If you want integrity for elections, then the appearance and the perception is that's the big deal there. And I definitely have a problem with the appearance. Now, I'm not making any absolute direct allegations. You know,
mm-hmm.
we're going from the appearance and the optics of it, and it's not good. Mm-hmm.
I can
Adrian.
Understand that.
Yeah, Carrie.
Yes, sir. Any questions?
Hello? No. Carrie, I was just saying, I just want all the best to her and the safety of herself and her loved ones. You know, that's most important. I think you asked the necessary question. So I'm grateful she was able to come on and, you know, give us the insight as to how things operate. I just say going forward, you know, you got to, and that's what all of us, we got to be above, what's that word, integrity, you know, because like mm-hmm. you say, on the outside looking in, it looks one, you know, it just looks ugly. And me being a mayoral candidate, yeah, it, it's, if it was to be recount, I'd be open for one. And but it's not to you know disparage you as an individual. You know what I'm saying? But again, thanks for coming on, and I'll let you get to Bob, Carrie. Thank you, Carrie.
Okay, we got two other callers. We're going to go to Bob, and then we're going to go to 314-677. Well, first of all, let me ask you, Kat, do you mind taking questions from other people? Or?
I'd be happy to do so.
I'm sorry?
I'd be happy to
do so. Is that your background? Whose background is that with the child? Is that yours, Adrian, or is that you, Chris?
Mute
yourself, please. Okay, so we're going to go. I'm sorry, Kat, and I did not get your answer. Are you okay with taking questions from other people or no?
Yes, as long as everyone understands there might be some things I can't answer. I'm fine.
Okay, great. Okay, Bob Willoughby, 817-446. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk at Work. Bob?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
I want to thank you for coming on the show. That's great. And I can't argue with the fact that, yeah, the guy that made the video should contact you first. Should have been the person he should have been interviewing. And the second thing, too, when they narrate it and you can't hear any sound, you can make a video kind of misleading because you're only getting their words there. So I understand that. But the things on this last election, it's no good either way. If there's something wrong in the voting or in the election count, either way, it's a loser either way, because we're so low on voting. And like in District 5, the last election, we had a little over 5,700 people voting there, which is terrible out of 100,000 people. That's really bad. But we dropped down to around 3,200, somewhere around there. So we dropped down about over 2,200 voters from one election to the next. So the city's getting bigger. And our votes went down some. And there's a lot of difference on them. We redistricted some, could play a role. But then again, our district's about the same size as it was. Actually, we dropped some and we picked up some. So I don't know if that played much of a role. I do know we dropped a few voters in this race that weren't in. And I know the more voters you have in, you can get more closer to having a runoff because they'll draw extra votes. The people that their friends will come out and vote for them but won't vote for either one of us. So I can understand that too some, but nevertheless, these votes are so low, and what the city has done to me over the last 10 years, from kicking me off the ballot in 2017 for not meeting a requirement that's not on the requirement list, which is an impossible task, but they got away with kicking me off the ballot nevertheless, okay, that makes you leery of things. I've had threatening letters from the city. They're going to sue me, because I don't turn a blind eye to bad employees and stuff. I'll express it in the paper and everything. But that was a false letter. They threatened to ban me from the city. And so, and they've shut me down many times talking at council, so because I'm not part of the establishment. And I will call out bad employees like Michelle Gook in community engagement. I think she's terrible at $170,000 a year, but getting ripped off big time. And they won't allow us to do that. That's attacking an employee. So anyway, all this stuff I've been doing and putting in the paper, and they've done games with me, like even the city has pulled a quorum on me before. So anyway, all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, I am leery about the voting as well because of all the things the city has done to me, too. So I think they'll go to all extents to make sure that I'm not in that seat. And they want to keep Jenna Business in that seat. You can see where she takes large sums of money from developers and that. So, you know, yeah. So, but anyway, but that's my reason, and also I thought about doing an independent count, kind of like do a mail-out. My mail-out, I did two ways, and that was another thing. The last election I spent about $5,000, picked up 600 votes. This time I spent almost $11,000, only picked up 650. I mean, this time we put up billboards. We did two ways of mail-outs. The council member has been terrible over the last 2 years. You have to be nuts to vote for her. I mean, just terrible, and that's what that is. That's at your bottom of the barrel with 2,000 people. So all that adds up, you know. But I'm thinking about doing another mail-out to the ones I mailed out and ask them to send me back in my subject a V for each family member in their house that voted for me, and we'll do an independent count. Now, one person criticized me for suggesting that, and I said, well, no. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Do you have a question for her? Because we're running out of time. Do you have a question for Ms. Kat.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to tell you why I wanted to go for a recall. I thought that, too.
Well, you're right. And you know what, Bob? I'm sorry. That's what started it, y'all. So Ms. Kat called in tonight, and that took everything in, and we went
that the person thought it was insulting to the voter counters, and it wouldn't be. If they have nothing to hide, they would welcome me doing that. Because if I can't prove anything, it just protects them more. So it's not insulting to them, me doing that, okay? If anything, if I was them, I'd want someone to do that to protect me, you know? So that's the end of that. And the question to I'm sorry for the woman coming. I do have a little bit of a question again. I got kind of a statement. Apparently you've been there for about 23 years doing this, if I understand correctly. And I'm thinking that maybe we should rotate the people in these things. I didn't know that. I'm learning from the show. Thank goodness Carrie has a show. But the only way I get educated. But anyway, I'm going to hush up from there. I did tell why I'm looking for a recount possibly to kind of explain my points. And I appreciate her coming on more than ever. That does help. And the only thing is, I guess one of my questions was going to be, why did you take papers out of the building? But y'all went over it before I got there. So there's no sense hashing over that again. So anyway, I'll move on. I know you got other callers waiting on the line. I want to ask them maybe some more important questions that we're not getting to, and I want to thank her for coming on.
I think I heard you ask her a question. I don't know if that's what she said. How long did you say you've been there, Kat?
I've been on the ballot board since spring of 2020.
About 23 years,
something like that. Over 20
years.
No.
She's only been there 3 years.
Oh, 2020. Okay, I'm thinking 2000. I'm sorry. You know, when you get old, some of the brain cells don't work, okay? I'm missing zeros in there. I didn't put the tube in there. Okay, so only 2020. I'm thinking, okay, never mind. Okay, do they allow a certain amount of time? Is there a limit, like a term limit, or is there that you can do this, and then someone else has to do it?
Well, we're election workers, as defined by the election code, so there is no term limit. But I do try to get new people into the board, and, you know, each party manages it differently. I've added a lot of new people who've never served before. And just to go back to the question I heard, like, right before I called in, someone was saying, you know, there's no black people in the room, and I think that's a really big problem. I've tried to reach out to members of the black community, but I myself am not black. And, you know, I don't know everyone. Okay. So I've tried to add black members to the board, and we had some black women, I think it was four black women who were serving on the Democratic board during the primary last year. But I'm not responsible for appointing judges in a general election. Or not judges, but clerks in a general election. Like, I don't get to select them. So the people who served in the mayoral election this year, I didn't have any say in that. But I think that's a really good point. We do need to try and make sure our members are representative of the diversity of Tarrant County.
I agree. Let's go to the last caller, 314-677. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
I was going to ask, is this lady, ma'am, are you bonded?
Oh.
What do you mean bonded? I mean, no.
Okay, you don't have a bond. Now, I think that ballots should be counted at the place they are cast on the same day. Because when you transport ballots across town, anything can happen to them. They need to be counted on the day of election where they are cast at. And that information should be disseminated to a central location. You should have a person, three people line up. And I'm going for paper ballots. A person on the end count, you give it to the person in the middle, they count. You give it to the person on the end, far end, they count. And at some point in time, an hour, 2 hours, you should compare numbers and correct because the ballots are right there. Another thing, too, I think that federal ballots should be separate from state and local. Federal ballots should have their own vetting system. And people must show that when they come, either by technology today, by the iris in your pupil, fingerprints, voice recognition, a blockchain number or something. Because the way it goes today, nobody can trust it. Those machines should not be hooked up to the internet. They should just be there to count based on how the numbers of how numbers are pushed or how levers are pulled. That's it. Well, nobody trusts these election systems that they have today, all these crazy things coming up. So what's your thought on this? I think that the people that's working on the election should be bonded.
Mm.
They should be bonded. And that gives you some assurance that you are trustworthy enough where a insurance company will put up a bond and saying, yes, this person is legitimate. That's my opinion.
Okay, Kat, what's your thoughts on that before we get out of here?
Okay, so I agree that there should be some sort of vetting system. It would help increase trust in the system. I don't know. This is the first time I've heard of bonding. I'm sorry. I'm just not that, like, experienced in the world, I guess. But, like, if they wanted to, you know, we're supposed to be vetted by our county parties and then by the elections board, and then I think ultimately election judges are approved by the commissioner's court. So there should be some sort of, you know, you can trust these people because they're members of your community and they're upstanding. But as to the other stuff, like, you know, how votes are counted and where votes are counted, the voting machines that we use in Tarrant County, they're not connected to the internet. I know that a lot of people think that they are, but they're not. The computers that we use in the ballot board room do have limited connectivity to the internet, which is, again, one of the things at issue here. And I think that's a question that we need to have some discussion about because it can raise suspicions. But as for, you know, when voting takes place and where and how and everything, that I don't have any input in that. I appreciate that different people have different opinions. I don't necessarily share your opinions because I think it should be easier for people to vote, not more restrictive. I really am in favor of voting centers and early voting. And I think that people who are overseas, like our military members, they need to have an option for voting. But I am also in favor of documentation and systems that make it easier to, you know, reconstruct basically what happened during an election, which is why I've worked really hard to make sure that we have really robust systems of documentation in place. And I would be happy to answer any further questions if you want to, you know, send me messages on Facebook or something. My email address and my phone number are public information. But concerns like that address that, they have to go through the legislature. All we can do in ballot board is take the laws we've been given and try to support voters as best we can within that framework.
Right. And we got to get out of here, Kat. So any final words before we get out of here tonight?
No. Thank you so much for letting me call on and talk about this. And I welcome any further discussion anyone would like to have. I think that in Tarrant County, we do have really secure elections, but I understand that there may be some questions about it. Also, when the runoff is coming up, there's going to be a public testing period, I believe, on May 18th. And I'll send you a message about it on Facebook because that's open to the public. Mm-hmm. It's only going to be for a couple hours because it's a small election, but anyone can show up and observe that. And also, if you want to be appointed as a poll watcher or something, contact your county party or a candidate on the ballot, and you can come and observe anything that we do, and we'll be happy to explain the process.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Kat, for accepting my invitation tonight. I am so glad we were able to show balance in one of the so, again, thank you so much. And I'm going to give you a piece of advice. I don't think you should put your phone number out there. Maybe let them email you, but I don't think it's wise for you to put your phone number out there. But FYI, you make the decision,
I hear you, but I'm a precinct chair, so it's actually public information anyway because I have to be contacted by precinct people. So, yeah, I have my public phone number.
Okay, I understand. Well, thank you again for stopping by tonight. Y'all listening, this show went a different direction tonight, but I'm so glad that it did, that we were able to show both sides of the story. What happens from here is up to, I guess, the Voter Integrity Task Force. So, again, thank Kat Kano for stopping by tonight. We thank you, the audience, for listening. Follow us on Facebook. That page is always popping. Let's Talk Fort Worth has got something fresh and up almost every couple of hours over there, so definitely follow that page. If you have a news tip, drop it off at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. That's letstalkfortworth@aol.com. If that's something that's in line with what we do here at Let's Talk Fort Worth, we will definitely consider putting it on. Also, listen, if you got a product, a service, a nonprofit that you would like to get the word out about, a business, consider advertising right here on Let's Talk Fort Worth. Drop me a line at the same email, letstalkfortworth@aol.com. And we will definitely love to talk to you about it. Also, listen, y'all, we're doing it like nobody else in Fort Worth. We are breaking stories. Tonight, we broke one that got for Cat calling it tonight. We have probably done four in a row. So listen, if you like the content that we drop every single week, consider donating to the show because it takes dollars for us to keep up with the competition. So consider, again, donating to what we do. Again, you can drop us a line at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. Listen, y'all, keep it locked right here on Let's Talk Fort Worth every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. And as I said, we're breaking stories. Good night.